Monday evening edition of the pod. Danny going to join me here in a second. We got some news to talk about, including the fascinating conclusion to the Clint Capela saga. And then we got to regrade our West offseason from last year. A lot of interesting ones there to get to as well. Golden State, Houston, so some big transactions, a Paul George trade. A lot of guys drafted pretty high in the lottery. The Lakers getting LeBron. So we got a lot to look at here. But why don't we start, Danny, with that Capela news. What is the deal?
So it was originally reported at 5 years, $90 million. It has subsequently been reported that $10 million of that is incentives, but a majority of those incentives are likely. So I'm treating it as pretty close to that five-year, $90 million figure. If you want to get persnickety about it, you could go 586 or something like that. And it depends on whether the Rockets make the Western Conference Finals. Tim Bontemps had the exact incentives in there. Some of it is about Clint Capela's free throw percentage, his defensive rebounds, which is fun. Morey's put in wrinkles like that in other contracts before. And so really, I think what the story of this contract is, for both sides really, is risk aversion. So for the Rockets, they were able to get out of the risk that Clint Capela is not the player that we thought he was last year. They paid him, and so he's not going to be an unrestricted free agent next year. And for Capela, he doesn't have to deal with the uncertainty and the financial risk that comes with going on a qualifying offer for 1 year and then hitting the open market.
Yeah, I think it's more interesting from Capela's standpoint. Obviously, the Rockets taking advantage of this market, taking advantage of the fact that the Dallas Mavericks, who really were the only potential suitor for Capela once the Suns drafted DeAndre Ayton, went in the direction of a one-year deal for DeAndre Jordan instead. And the Rockets, we were somewhat critical of them of being almost unrealistically low, but apparently they knew what they were doing because they got him for what is an absolute steal if he can play at the level that he played at last year, not to mention if he could improve a little bit. He's not like a crazy skill guy. You know, he's a player very reliant on athleticism, although that may discount his finishing ability around the basket, but that's not something that typically gets better. But as you get much older, but this especially the fact that it's 5 years, Danny, you know, I mean, that's really even more so than the fact that it starts at such a low annual pay. I mean, Capela, if they do the maximum 8% raises and he gets the full $90 million, notwithstanding the incentives, it's going to start at $15.5 million this year, and it'll be making 20 in the fifth year of that deal, when I think it'll be his age 28 season. So considering that this guy is clearly a top 10 center, his ability to switch was so key to their scheme, protects the rim well, great rebounder, one of the best finishers around the rim in basketball, I think this is just an absolute steal for the Rockets. And for Capela, you'd say, well, why would he do that, right? I mean, what's the math on where he would have been if he had just taken the qualifying offer as opposed to this deal?
If we run through the basic numbers, his qualifying offer was $4.7 million. So rounding that up to five, he would have needed a four-year, $85 million deal to break even, theoretically, with this offer. That is about $30 million less than his max on a four-year deal with a new team would have been. You know, obviously the Rockets could pay more. They even could have given him that fifth year again because they would have had full bird rights. And so he needed to get to 85 to break even, could have gotten 117. And so I think some people are like, oh, Clint Capela took too little money. My frustration with this isn't really with Capela, because risk mitigation and all that kind of stuff. He could have gotten him not even a max offer sheet. A max offer sheet would have been about 4 years, $110 million. He basically got the same amount of guaranteed money as Zach LaVine. And once you get down to that price, even if he's not your number one fit, teams could have just rolled the dice on a lucrative offer. I mean, I understand why Dallas didn't do it. This is the pragmatism versus realism argument. You know, like, yeah, it would be great if you could tell DeAndre Jordan to wait a week and a half and to wait, but that's not the way any of this works. But Sacramento, you know, just as a value proposition, if you can get him for $20 million a year and maybe you make the Rockets
how about Atlanta?
More, but you go
how about Atlanta?
That. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's one where, now, I think there was always an assumption, because Atlanta, you know, they could have made this offer on July 6th and then still had plenty of time to do all the rest of the stuff that they did afterwards, and they could have really used Capela. Now, certainly there was a chilling effect because there was a feeling that, oh, like, Houston is going to match. He's a guy who could even, like, I mean, he absolutely, Capela would have gotten max offer sheets in other markets, right? So maybe those teams reached out to Capella's representation and they weren't interested. And then, you know, things really dried up and the Rockets turned the screws and his representation decided, hey, you know what? Like, we haven't made any money in our career. You know, you're basically around $1 or $2 million a year as the 25th pick. And yeah, we have a 100% chance at getting $80 million and, you know, pretty damn good chance of getting $90 million. So do we want to take the $4.7 million, wait until next year and take the injury risk on ourselves? You know, I mean, this was probably right on the borderline for me, but I would say, you know, is there really that much of a difference in your life between 80 to 90 million and 120 million? You know, I mean, I think a lot of players really measure themselves by how much they're getting paid, and it's important to them in that respect. But like, you know, 30 years from now, hard to say your lifestyle is going to be appreciably different if you got $80 million over the course of your career versus $100 million. Obviously, there's taxes involved too there, but that in some ways reduces the difference even more.
And he's not the president of the MBPA, so the precedent doesn't matter as much. That's more of a Chris Paul concern. And, you know, Capella did well by him. And this is the negotiation tactic that is really challenging from a human perspective from Houston in this case, where you want to make an offer that they have to seriously consider and hope that they, but also not one that they find so offensive that even though you could make an argument it's a reasonable offer, they're turned off by it. And so you have to know the player personally, know their crew, kind of how, like, crew meaning agent, like how they approach this sort of thing. Is it a David Falk, you know, like that whole approach, or something else? And I think that looks like Houston handled this well, but getting Capella at a bargain of a price relative to his production level last season and our expectations for him moving forward, this is still a very, very expensive team over the next couple of years.
I would just say it's expensive. I don't know about very expensive when you can.
Yeah, they're not the Thunder. That's fair.
Well, they're not the Thunder. They're not the Cavs. They're not the Warriors at this point, right? I mean, as of now, and they got to round out their roster. They'll probably get some buyout guys. It's right. They haven't used any of the mini mid-level so far either. They've got Carmelo on now. They're going to add D'Anthony.
Well, technically, they're using part of the mini mid-level for Hartenstein and then for Melton, I would assume.
Yeah, if they're going to go longer.
Because to give those guys more than 2 years, they have to dip into
the middle. Thanks. Yeah, that is an important thing to note there. But so they basically are at their 14 guys. That's probably all they're going to carry now, with Melton and Hartenstein and then Carmelo coming into the fold as well, that he actually just got waived. We'll get to that in a second. So while you can make the argument, hey, you know, they should have retained Abamute, they had full bird rights on Ariza, this is really an incredibly cheap team. It is so much cheaper than anyone could have thought it would be to be competing at this level. They could make their team better. There may be other things they could do in terms of taking on money later this year that, you know, maybe there's someone else out there that expires in 2020 that they could flip Ryan Anderson for. If they wanted to throw in an asset, especially once we get towards the trade deadline, there'll be buyout guys in the market. They might use more of the mini mid-level. But while I am critical of them, I think they've downgraded quite a bit, especially defensively, with the trade of Melo for Ariza. You know, I think James Ennis can hopefully give them more offense, but maybe less defense than Mbamute did. This is saving a lot of money. We'll see whether that actually gets back into the team or not. But if you had told me before the season, hey, you know what, they're only going to be probably, when it's all said and done, $15 million over the tax line, that's like a huge win for at least Tillman Fertitta's pocketbooks, if nothing else. And it all really came from the fact that they were able to squeeze Capella this well. And I was critical of them. They moved up just a little bit. Maybe it was the incentives that got the deal done. I had a question for you. Do you think that the saga of Nerlens Noel has had an influence on Yusuf Nurkic and Clint Capella's negotiations?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, Alex Len also didn't benefit from, you know, taking the qualifying offer. And I think we have a pretty clear idea now of how disposable centers are. And so while both of those players can believe that they are above that threshold, it doesn't take a lot to fall below it, especially when you consider health.
You're talking about Capella as well?
Well, I mean, just the idea that, as you were talking about it, with the marginal difference between 90 million and 110, certainly that is $20 million. Nobody is arguing that. But if you're going to argue that there is this downside thing, that, who knows, it's not that he becomes a bad player or anything like that, but he just falls into, like, below league average or something like that. If he just has a shakier year, or maybe he gets hurt for a little bit and the Rockets look good with another center in place. I don't think that would have happened, but there is certainly a non-zero chance of it happening. And if there's a non-zero chance, then that lowers his market value. But he is certainly miles better than those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's different because, number one, his finishing is at such an elite level. But number two, the ability to switch the way he does it and still protect the rim and rebound, his offensive rebounding. So, I mean, there's a lot of things, I think. Like, what separates him from Nurkic is he can play, if you have him, your team can play completely differently than you can if you have Jusuf Nurkić at center, right? Like, he's got to just play as a traditional center. He's got to drop back in the pick and roll. He's going to get carved up by Anthony Davis and Nikola Mirotic in the playoffs. You know, I mean, that's the kind of guy I think of as disposable. And last thing here too, Capella's max on a 5-year deal, the Minnesota Timberwolves are well aware of this, would have been 5 years and $147 million. And so to get Capella for basically 2/3 of that is outstanding work by the Rockets front office. I think we really were feeling like during the playoffs that, at least in terms of his talent, Capella was a max type of player and certainly a top 10 center in the league. And to get a guy like that for an average annual value of $18 million, which with the cap going up is, you know, that's just maybe slightly better than average starter money. Pretty damn good. He's making less per season than Ryan Anderson, if you need another data point.
Yeah, and we will get more data points in this. I think this is one of those contracts that is going to look substantially better once next offseason happens, and we're going to see some of his other guys now that the league is about to be flush again. And that, you know, we'll talk about this in bigger when we get into offseason, because we're doing regrades today when we get into grades for this offseason. But I think that I have a feeling on how this is going to go.
One more thing.
Go ahead.
What do you think the chances are, you know, you could throw an injury, you could throw in performance, you could throw in just teams not necessarily needing centers, whatever. What do you think the chances are that he would have gotten a big enough contract to make it worth his while next season, right? So he's getting the $4.7 million this year. His total, so he would have needed to get at least 4 for $85 million to be whole.
To break
but,
even.
You know, he's really got to get more than that, right? Because you would obviously rather have a certainty of 5 for $90 million now versus a possibility. So you really, you know, you probably would have to maybe get like $20 million more guaranteed next summer. So
I was thinking like $100 million, 4 for $100 million or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think if he just played exactly the way he played last year, you know, no injuries that would affect him going forward, and he has not been injured really at all in his career, it's very difficult for me to think that someone wouldn't have offered him that type of contract, including perhaps the Rockets, who would have had his full bird rights. But, you know, there is the injury risk. There is the risk that just, you know, he doesn't play as well. He's had, you know, a pretty good season 2 years ago and then one really good season this year. So, you know,
do you want a data point on that? Because I was just working on what I call the space race. It'll come out at some point for The Athletic. As of right now, there are 13 teams that I have projected to have $25 million or more in space for next
how
year.
Many of those
and that
teams,
does not include the Houston
how many
Rockets.
Of those teams would need a center? Dallas presumably, if DeAndre doesn't come back. Let me look at it.
The Clippers, maybe.
Yeah, Clippers.
We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on with the Knicks. We don't know what's going on with the Pels. Not exactly the best destinations. That is definitely true.
Yeah.
And of course the Rockets. I think that's the most likely thing that would have happened, is he would have leveraged one of those teams into getting a little bit more money from the Rockets. But yeah, I would say the chances of that were reasonably high. Like maybe even above 50%. Like, but $100 million, I would say that's below 50%, but not too much. Maybe even the 40 yeah. to 50%
but,
range.
But what we just
but
went through.
That's not enough. That's not enough. Like, that's too much risk for me to
yeah,
take on.
Yeah, right. I mean, what is that? That's 3 or 4 teams that you're looking at that would have that.
Yeah.
And there
are other ones that could clear. Like, especially like if Chicago is happy with Wendell Carter, like this group could sure. thin out pretty quickly.
Sure, and those are less desirable destinations than Houston. You know, you're, at least for these next couple of years, you're going to be right in contention. So I think, you know, the more we think about this, and especially I'm much more conservative from the player side of like, hey, you know, if you have this amount of money now, might I have tried to just take it all the way up to the deadline in October 1st and try and squeeze the Rockets for a couple more million? Yeah, I might have tried to do that. You know, maybe I wouldn't have settled for this right now, but, you know, would I have eventually had to take, you know, $90 million or so, whatever the offer is? Yeah, you know, I think I probably would have done that for some of the reasons that we're talking about here. So I think it was good that we went through that last part of the exercise, because, yeah, I mean, they're really, you know, and as an agent, obviously, you can kind of ask around, at least somewhat informally, and maybe he realized, hey, you know what, while he is in theory worth this, there's just not that many teams that are trying to win now that really need a center. You know, Brooklyn is one that might have space, but they'll be going after veteran free agents. They have Jared Allen. Are they going to really say, hey, you know what, we might want Capella, but you know, Jared Allen is kind of a Capella light, and we've got him for $3 million a year, so maybe we'll spend our money somewhere else. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of teams that go through that.
Yeah, and you need to be, to feel comfortable about it, I think you need to be first or second on a team's list.
Yeah.
Because once you start working down there, I mean, it doesn't take much, and there are players they could trade for. You know, you could trade for somebody, or somebody breaks out. You have a whole year also for all of those teams to reevaluate, to acquire other players and everything else. So yeah, I think that's a good point.
All right, well, I am back from, I actually had two bachelor party weekends because we had a free place to stay, and so there were about 20 people that I wanted to invite, and I was like, all right, it probably be easier to just do it in 2 weekends. I've actually, for once in my life, had a little time off. So now I am back though, and right after we're done, gonna make a little Blue Apron here, fire up the grill and make some cheeseburgers with spicy slaw. If you don't know what Blue Apron is, they take pre-portioned ingredients and deliver them right to your door in concert with quick and easy chef design recipes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season. It shows up at your door. We normally do 2 recipes a week when we're actually home and have time to cook. And we'll do the 4-person, and then we've got some leftovers for the next day. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free at blueapron.com/capspace. Easy to remember. We talk about capspace all the time in the program. That's blueapron.com/capspace to get your first 3 meals free. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. We should probably also briefly mention that weird guarantee on Michael Carter Williams, just because Houston is always kind of doing creative stuff, and this might be a little bit of a trend. I mean, it's not that big of a deal on its own, but we might see more of this.
Sure. So Michael Carter Williams, he's making a 1 year at the minimum, so that means part of it is subsidized by the league. So it'll cost the Rockets $1.5 million overall. He'll make $1.8 million. But that contract is only partially guaranteed for $1.2 million until the league-wide cutdown date in January. And so the way that works is it's just a little bit of protection for the Rockets in case it doesn't work out. And when, even though the Rockets are not as far over the luxury tax as we expected, anything can help there. And that also makes his contract more palatable, theoretically, if instead of cutting him, they wanted to offload it to somebody else. That's less money for them, for that other team to have to take on.
Yeah. And you could just trade him to somewhere. He's on a minimum contract, so any team could take him in. And now, if it's only $1.2 million guaranteed, you're halfway through the league year, essentially January 10th. So now you only have to throw in, you know, $400,000 to pay the rest of his salary, maybe some slight additional consideration, and you can either get someone back or you just get a little bit of get out of jail free for a team that's in the tax in particular. That's a nice little bit of maneuvering. And I think this will explain why it was that Carter Williams agreed so early, because he was willing to take this kind of deal that had some risk mitigation in it, which when you're a tax team and you're giving out any kind of guaranteed money for a player who doesn't have any long-term potential, probably in Carter Williams, and may or may not contribute to your team, that they probably offered that deal to a number of players, and Carter Williams on the fringes of the league at this point after last year jumped on it.
Something I wanted to mention that I hope this is a greater thing, I'm going to write about this at some point, is teams that expect to be active on the buyout market deliberately putting a little bit more flexibility into that. That could be not putting 15 guys on the roster at the beginning of the year, using two-way contracts or even non-guarantees just to keep the price down a little bit, because having to cut guaranteed players to make it work, assuming you're going to get one, maybe even two players out on the buyout market. And this year, we were going to have so many expiring contracts, we could even see more than that. It's smart to put in a little bit more flexibility if you can expect that your team is going to get there. It's actually a reason I was critical of what the Lakers ended up doing. I talked about that a little bit with Bonteps on the last Real GM Radio, or the one before the last one, about the Lakers using all 15 because they would theoretically be a good buyout place.
Yeah, but without being in the tax, you know, if they want to just cut someone, they can. But yeah, I mean, they've used up resources, obviously, with the room exception. Let's do a couple of quick hitters here. Ryan Arcidiacono, who was on a two-way last year with the Bulls, played very, very little. In fact, had a memorable stint in which he was like, you know, negative 20 in a five minutes in the first game of the year against Toronto. I'm not sure that he played much more. He might have not even played at all other than that, at least until late in the year when they were really into tank mode. But 1 year partially guaranteed deal. Do we know how much that's guaranteed? It better not be for much.
I haven't heard yet, but I'm guessing not much. But it's the Bulls, so you never know.
Yeah, but he's not on the two-way anymore. They can now use that slot somewhere else. Devin Harris has returned to Dallas. He is... Didn't we talk about that last time? I thought we did. Didn't you say,
it
like...
It was breaking news, it was like right at the end, and we didn't know for sure that it was at the veterans minimum, so it looks like he's taking the Yogi Ferrell spot. Our friend Tim Bontemps had a piece that came out today on Monday for the Washington Post talking about how Jerry Colangelo, his time in Philadelphia is over. They're honoring his contract through the end of the year, but he is not involved there. Of course, there was the acrimony related to the departure of his son Brian and that whole saga. So a pretty tumultuous tenure for Colangelo, started with the team in 2015, and that tenure is now functionally over. Financially, it'll still last a little longer.
Yeah, and Colangelo refused to comment on the Twitter saga other than saying that it was a difficult time for Brian and his family, and that he threatened to tarnish the Sixers. He didn't say that. Was reported at the time. However, Pat Connaughton will join the Milwaukee Bucks. He is getting slightly more than the minimum. They had a small amount of their non-taxpayer mid-level remaining, about 1.6 million of that. So that is a little bit more than the minimum salary. That affects it, trying to trade him a little bit, but not too much. It's still pretty small. And I think this is a good get for the Bucks.
It is. And Connaughton, you know, capable player. You think about this in the context of Portland, that basically they got Nick Stauskas for similar money. I believe Pat Connaughton is a substantially superior player. And the Bucks also got a we don't know if it's a non-guarantee or exactly what it is on that second year, but it seems like they're going to have at least some flexibility there. And another point I want to bring up, just because people ask about this a lot, the cost to the Bucks is also not as big with this, because since they were going to offer a two-year contract anyway, they weren't getting any part of that subsidized by the league, so it doesn't really matter. Bumping it up a little bit isn't even the same cost. That was an issue with like a Emeka Okafor's contract. Theoretically, adding that second year actually made it a lot more expensive for the New Orleans Pelicans last year.
Yeah, and Connaughton gives the Bucks some much needed shooting, although with Ersan Ilyasova they've got that as well. Connaughton doesn't really fit in well with the idea, again, of having a more versatile lineup, a more switchable lineup, but seems like he should be an upgrade on Jason Terry in that backup shooting guard role from last season. Let's move to the Clippers now, Danny.
They made the first steps towards alleviating their eventual roster crunch. It doesn't have to be right away, by waiving CJ Williams. They now have 16 guaranteed contracts, but that 17th is Patrick Beverley, who is not guaranteed but is functionally guaranteed. They're the only way he would not be on the team is if they traded him. You know, they're not going to cut him for any reason. And the other piece of Clippers news, this does not relate to the roster crunch at all. I just enjoy trades involving two-way players. They traded for Jonathan
first
Motley.
First two-way player ever traded, right?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
I think I read that, yeah. I can't think of another one before him either.
I can't think of another one either off the top of my head. But so Motley signed a two-year two-way contract, so that meant that the Mavericks could trade him. He does play the same position as Angel Delgado, the other Clippers two-way guy, but it's, you know, you make it work with whatever you want to do. So they still have a crunch to deal with. I'm very interested in how the front office resolves this, because basically everybody else is on guaranteed contracts. Do they cut established players who just weren't going to be in the rotation? Do they try to move, let's say, somebody like Sam Decker, maybe another team, kind of like the Jarrell Martin thing? If Orlando keeps him, they would just rather have, you know, take a flyer on him. I think there are teams that would be that flyer on Sam Decker would be worth it. They have limited flexibility. Incidentally, Orlando would be one of those, maybe, off the top of my head. But so yeah, I'm interested in how the Clippers resolve it, but they do not have to do this right away. They can wait until right before the season if they want to.
Yeah, and an interesting juxtaposition between Williams and Ty Wallace, both of whom played very well on two-way contracts last year. Wallace was not interested in signing a contract the way Williams did, which has some pretty ugly guarantees, only $125K guaranteed the first day of the season, and doesn't fully guarantee until the cutdown day, and then he's got another non-guaranteed year on after that. Williams, you would think he would get claimed. I thought he provided adequate wing play. He was actually starting for the Clippers for a time, hitting some three-pointers and playing some adequate defense. And then by contrast, Ty Wallace, who another guy who we wonder, like, where the hell are his offer sheets, especially with the Clippers not having any kind of room right now on their roster, you'd think that he'd be gettable with a relatively small offer. We'll see who ends up in the better situation here. I mean, maybe it's possible that CJ Williams ends up getting claimed and spends the whole season with the team, but if he does that, he'll likely have outperformed that non-guaranteed minimum contract. And Ty Wallace, you know, he's still unsigned as of now, and that qualifying offer is only a two-way contract for him with $50,000 guaranteed, which is, you know, he's not going to sign that presumably after playing well in the NBA last year. So now Williams has been released. I think there are tons of teams that could use him. It'd be interesting to see whether he gets claimed. I mean, he played well, then he had a severe ankle sprain and ended up missing a bunch of time and never really got back in the rotation towards the end. So maybe he was out of sight, out of mind, but I still don't understand why neither of those guys has been able to get any kind of a deal. And I think Williams is going through the waiver process as we record this. We'll see where he ends up. And I'll say this too, for the Clippers, especially since you just drafted two point guard, kind of combo guard players, that why don't you just waive Juwan Evans and hold on to CJ Williams instead? I mean, there's, if anybody knows that you need as much depth on the wing as possible, it's the Clippers. I mean, Juwan Evans didn't really show much, and yeah, I know he's guaranteed. Maybe they could have just traded him and paid his salary, or there's another team that'd be interested in him. Perhaps it was just simply the optics of giving up on someone that they drafted. I can't remember that he was 39 or 40. I think he was drafted before Thornwell, I want to say. But yeah, that was a little weird.
I think he was 38.
Oh yeah, it was 38 and 39 that they had last year. Yeah. But all right, what else we got here?
Another one that I don't think this is necessarily a big deal, but I want to mention it. Shams Charania originally had it, that Jimmy Butler had elective minor surgery on his shooting hand. And he's not going to miss time. I just thought it was interesting. He's not participating in the Team USA stuff. There isn't really much in terms of, like, there aren't any Team USA games. They are doing a camp right now in Vegas, but that is entirely different. So we can mention it and move on, unless it becomes something later on, which I sincerely doubt. The Celtics made a couple of different smaller moves. They signed Jabari Bird 2 years, $3 million. So that looks like a 2-year minimum contract. He was on a two-way last year, and they waived Rodney Purvis.
Don't you mean Luke Ridnour?
I guess he has the Ridnour Award right now.
Yeah, of who's just been moved around the most as a non-guaranteed guy.
Yeah, I think he, Dakari Johnson, and Timofey Mozgov are all on two trades so far this offseason. So we'll see if any one of them. But Purvis is not going to get a third because he is getting waived by the Boston Celtics. He has been, I don't know if that's Duck Duck Goose or whatever it is. He's at this point, he's getting waived. So Boston's roster is pretty close to set. I think I have them about $3 million over the tax line. I would expect, if there's a reasonable way for them to do it, for them to get under. Not so much because ownership wants to duck it, but because they have the possibility of starting the repeater clock 1 year later is pretty significant for the Celtics team, because not only are their current players getting expensive, but Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, whoever of that group they retain, is going to get substantially more expensive as well. So if they can take a slight downtick in terms of a player and duck it for this year, they absolutely should.
In Atlanta, the Carmelo Anthony buyout is over, and Carmelo actually giving back, he will not be double dipping at all. He's giving back $2.4 million of his $27.9 million salary. As we've been talking about, he'll only count as $1.5 million, the 2-year veterans minimum with the Rockets. And again, the reason that rule exists is that on 1-year veteran minimums contracts, they don't want teams prioritizing younger players over veterans because they're cheaper. So that's why the league it's set up so that the league will just pay anything over the 2 years veterans minimum. But that means that the Hawks get a little bit of cap space back. We'll see what they do with it. They've not signed Alex Len yet to that room exception, which would eat up that cap space. And they have a couple of smaller contracts, I think, out there as well that they haven't signed yet. So they'll have a little bit of room to work with now.
They could take on Dakari Johnson. Make him the new Ridnour.
And then they also signed Daniel Hamilton to a 1-year guaranteed deal. Hamilton was on a 2-way contract with Oklahoma City last season. Presumably, he did not receive a qualifying offer from Oklahoma City, or they would have had a chance to match that. I was not following the 2-way player qualifying offers that closely, but Hamilton played well in the G League last year. Probably a better use of a roster slot than, say, Antonius Cleveland, who, as we mentioned, struggled a little bit in summer league and is now a Chicago Bull. Does that do it here? Should we get to our revised West offseason grades here?
Yeah, let's do it. So the big elements of it last year for Dallas, they drafted Dennis Smith, they signed Maxi Kleba, and then they retained Dirk Nowitzki and Nerlens Noel. We just talked about Nerlens actually in the other part. They lost AJ Hammonds, which is a good thing for them, and then a bunch of other guys that weren't really a key part of the rotation, Brusino, Liggins, that type of thing. So at the time, I gave them an A-. They drafted exactly who I wanted. They got Dirk on a reasonable contract, which ended up working out, you know, reasonably well for them. But my criticism at the time was that what I noted was that the decision to focus on using their money in 2018 versus 2017, that I wrote then, that might bite them a little bit, because there were some good contracts, and I singled out John Simmons in this, that were available that might not have been available in 2018. It turned out 2018 was a better market, but it is kind of true that money that Dallas, if Dallas had spent a little bit more last season, they could have made their team better.
And which would have been a disaster.
It wasn't really as... yeah, in a certain
they
way,
they got Luka Doncic now.
I mean, that's true, but they ended up not needing to squeeze every single dollar out of 2018. They're kind of figuring all this stuff out with the room exception and everything right now. So, you know, Hammonds for McRoberts in particular, you know, like, yeah, they got a second round pick out of that. They got out of AJ Hammonds' minimum contract.
They
for
got
the upcoming season.
$5 million in cash too.
They did get $5 million cash, but McRoberts only liked 6 minutes for them. So, you know, I lowered my grade to a B+, partially because they just wasn't as much of a benefit. But I will mention also that Maxi Kleba was way better than I thought he would be. So that's certainly a positive. But I would say Dennis Smith, not that he had a bad year, but he was a little bit below my expectations. So dropping it from an A- to a B+, not a big deal.
Yeah, it's interesting that you saw it that way. I had also given them an A-. I actually moved them up to an A. I thought Dennis Smith was right about where I expected him to be. Clearly Donovan Mitchell would have been a better selection there, but I mean, that Smith was really at the end of what was widely perceived as a tier, so no one was talking about them taking Donovan Mitchell over Dennis Smith. They got Dirk to come back on a pretty cheap deal, $5 million, with that team option. And then one thing you didn't mention was they did not give a big deal to Nerlens Noel. He ended up signing the qualifying
they
offer.
Didn't end up giving him one.
Yeah.
They offered it.
Yeah.
Reportedly.
Well, okay. But then, I mean, at the time, he was just sitting out there, and I think we all assumed, although actually, you know what? I forget exactly when it was that it came out that he was going to just sign the qualifying offer. It was a little bit earlier than the deadline, but I think when we were doing our grades, we didn't know that yet. We assumed that it would probably, they'd end up at some kind of a long-term deal after they traded for him. And so, avoiding that long-term deal, not caving in to Rich Paul, was a great idea and left a bunch of cap space open. Then they're able to get DeAndre Jordan. I think he, just getting him on a one-year deal, despite the fact we think he's a little overrated, is certainly a better use of cap space than whoever they would have signed to a big deal, including Noel last summer. They were bad enough that they had to throw in their 2019 pick, but they're able to get Doncic, who I think we both thought was the best player in this draft. And so that now they've got a pretty nice nucleus going forward. So I actually moved them up from an A- to an A, because there's really nothing that they did that, even in hindsight, I would have done differently, that they realistically could have done outside of, you know, taking Mitchell over Smith, which probably was not realistic as of that time.
Anything else on them, or do you want to move on to the Denver Nuggets?
So just to be clear, the reason you downgraded them from an A- to a B+ was because you just felt like Smith didn't turn out as well?
Well, I think they could have, they missed something in the opportunity to get players on value contracts, just because they waited out that market longer than other teams did. They had cap space, and
so would that have been a one-year contract?
No, they could have given, if they gave John Simmons $5 million, you know, like the contract Orlando gave him, they wouldn't have sacrificed anything in terms of 2018-19. They would have been completely fine.
Yeah, although we didn't know that at the time, right? They might have needed more money to pay DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, but if it's a value contract, like, yeah. I think the Magic could have traded Simmons if that's the money they needed to clear, then they could have done so. And so for me, it's just, you know, it was something they had that was of some value, and I think they could have done more with it. And so it's not a big distinction. And you could make an argument that with Kleba being better, that maybe I should bump it back up to an A-, but I still think a B+ is the grade, just in terms of use of resources, that they had this resource later on in the process.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they were like $13 million under the cap even at the end of the year,
and they held on to that and didn't
end up actually doing anything with it. So yeah, I mean, but signing someone who would have helped them win games kind of would have been a problem. I understand what you're saying, but I also think that wouldn't have necessarily been the plan. But I mean, you know, you could make the argument.
Yeah, but see, the problem is I understand what you're getting with that, but they weren't trying to lose games last year. Like they wanted, like if they could have made the like if they had been even luck in close games, they would have been far enough out of that pick. So it's kind of like it's results over process to me to say, oh well, they lost a bunch of games because A, it wasn't their intention, and B, they played like a better team than they were.
Well, so to clarify, they weren't trying to lose games until, you know, the last 2 months of the season, because 48 minutes in the box score for Aaron Harrison against the Suns in the last night of the season would argue with the idea that they weren't trying to lose games.
I'm talking about what actually
I mean, that's a lot on them, obviously. I thought it was but I thought that was interesting that we both kind of felt the same way about a lot of stuff, but you downgraded them a little bit and I upgraded them a little bit. But let's move to the Nuggets.
Okay, so the Nuggets, this is a really interesting one because, like a few we've talked about in the East, the regrade includes information that was not included the last time. So the big move that they made was signing Paul Millsap, which they were able to do with cap space. And then the other big move, which we talked about at the time, was they moved the number 13 pick to get a later pick and get Trey Lyles, who had a good season for them. But that number 13 pick ended up being Donovan Mitchell. But the other thing, and then they let Gallinari go. But then the other element that we didn't know at that point was the Mason Plumlee contract. And the Mason Plumlee contract is, it's not a disaster because it's you know, it's a negative value contract, but it's not bad. But the cost of it to this franchise, because of what they had to give up in the offseason to get under the luxury tax, what they chose to give up to get under the luxury tax, all that kind of stuff.
It was such shitty planning. It was just, I mean, we talked about this.
Well, and it was a terrible use of leverage. Like, it was one of those circumstances which happened every single year. We're like, oh, well, there aren't any teams left for Mason Plumlee. He's probably going to take the qualifying offer. Nope. They give him 3 years at like more than double the amount of the qualifying offer.
The qualifying offer would have been great for them. And, you know, maybe you would have been mad or whatever. But I mean, but it was all just sunk costs. It's like, oh, we already traded Nurkic and a first for this guy. Well, okay. Once you had him in your system, was he really that good? I mean, it was, oh, man. All right. We had a long rant.
We knew more about
that.
How good, and we knew how good Jokic was as well. So, like, if this wasn't a circumstance, they did end up, Malone played them together a little bit, but there wasn't this pressing need of, hey, if he's, we need an answer here. If we lose him, we can't get anything to replace it. It wasn't circumstances like that. So I gave them an A- originally on the premise that they did the big stuff right. I mean, Millsap getting that team option on the third year is phenomenal, just because that took out, you know, a lot of the risk there with Millsap. They did pay him a bunch of money, but I mean, not an unreasonable contract in terms of annual salary by any means. And they were able to get out a lot of risk. I still do really like that. And I also hated the Tyler Lydon pick, you know, after, especially when he had lost year.
Well, not only that,
but so I moved them.
But the fact that they moved down, in theory, they wanted to get OG Anunoby and then miscalculated by moving down too far and not being able to get him.
And they couldn't move back up to get him either. Well, they didn't move back up. Maybe they could have in terms of, I don't know who different teams are valuing in that range and everything else like that. So I moved them from an A minus to a C. They were a really challenging team for me because the big thing with Millsap, they still did get right. It ended up being that they missed the playoffs and Millsap missed a bunch of time, so they didn't get as much value in the first year of that contract, but the structure of it, he's still a really good player. It was an unforeseeable injury with dealing a wrist thing. It wasn't related to anything really. So, I mean, I think they're going to be haunted by the Donovan Mitchell trade. I just think they are. So that you're kind of balancing those two things of getting a good player without sacrificing anything, but then an awful contract that ended up hurting them and a trade which will hurt them for years.
Yeah, so I had given them a B+ initially. You had given them an A-. I'm now moving that down to a C. I thought, you know, Millsap, while they did a good job getting him on the contract that they did, I didn't think he was that much of a difference maker even when he was healthy. Now maybe he could have integrated a little bit more. Trey Lyles helped them a little bit, but obviously that Mitchell trade does not look good. Now, for to say, oh, they should have taken Mitchell, all right, you know, they already had, I mean, remember, even Emmanuel Mudiay they hadn't given up on yet. They had Jamal Murray, they had Gary Harris, you know, so I think the idea of trading down was good. I don't know if Trey Lyles would have been the guy that I would have targeted in retrospect, though I thought Lyles had shown something and his value was a little bit lower. You know, if it's just some rando number 13 pick, you know, maybe that deal doesn't look as bad. Gary Harris, who they got on 4 years, $74 million, he's got $10 million in unlikely incentives. that, you know, if they're really getting into the playoffs, I think it's mostly based on that. So they'll be happy to pay that if they're getting that far. So that's a fair deal probably for Harris. Now, would Harris have gotten that kind of money had they just waited until restricted free agency this year? Seems unlikely. Maybe you could have seen, you know, I mean, the only team that gave an offer sheet for a two guard was Sacramento, and that really didn't seem to make a ton of sense with LaVine when they have a bunch of two guards already. So maybe they could have squeezed Harris and done a little bit better there. You know, I mean, he's making less or about the same annually as Clint Capella, but I thought that was a fine job. But nonetheless, I mean, because of the Plumlee contract, because of the Mitchell trade, drafting Lydon at number 24, I lowered them from a B plus to a C. And it's interesting to say that, though, Danny, because if you had asked us before the season, oh, how are the Nuggets going to do? I mean, what they won, 46? This was 40. Yeah, it was 46, right? When they missed the playoffs. So that would have been like maybe one or two fewer wins than we might have predicted them for. You know, I think I had them like sixth in the West. It's just the rest of the West was so good around them. But it still seems like, it, you know, with Plumlee, with then having to setting themselves up for having to make this trade with their first round pick this year to get off of Fareed and Arthur, I mean, that I really didn't care for any of that, and that's why I'm down to a C. But you know, Millsap was still a good contract, so that's why you're getting a C. Yeah. If not, I mean, I kind of considered going even lower. Did you go lower?
No, I went with a C. Yeah. And two other things I want to mention, that in one in each direction. So I think they cut bait with Danilo Gallinari at exactly the right time. You know, the money got from the Clippers was a great contract for them to avoid, and Millsap is obviously a significantly better player, even if though he missed time with injury. And then the other thing is, part of why I really like the Millsap structure is that it gave them more flexibility in the summer of 2019. And the flexibility to pay Paul Millsap less money is certainly still there. But by paying Nikola Jokic, which 100% on board with that, and paying Will Barton, which I'm less than 100% on board with, through those transactions, they're not really gaining as much flexibility as I had hoped. They're now the kind of the max slot idea is at least for right now out the window, unless they really got off of some salary. So that is something that they lost a little bit. It was flexibility that they gained in the contract that they aren't going to be able to use as much. They'll still be able to sign somebody if they want, but I think more likely it's going to be a more tame offseason for Denver next year.
I'll get to the Golden State Warriors, which is another interesting one. But first, this from Crypt Toothbrush. I mentioned I was away the last two weekends, but didn't have to sacrifice on the quality of my toothbrush in the slightest because I take a Crypt Toothbrush with me whenever I travel. It's basically the size of a regular handheld toothbrush, but it is, of course, an electric toothbrush. It has no charging required, just runs on a single AAA battery that they say it lasts for 3 months. It actually lasted longer than that for me. And if you haven't used an electric toothbrush before, you really should, because you probably have sweater teeth, which is what my sister called it, when you could just feel the plaque on your teeth. And if you haven't tried an electric toothbrush yet, you're going to realize all of a sudden that, wow, I really wasn't getting my teeth that clean. Get more gum stimulation that way as well, I would say. They've got, and Quip is just, everything about it is just so well designed. It's got this little suction mount that you can either use it as a cover when you're traveling, or you just flip it around, stick it to your mirror, and it doesn't take up any counter space if you're living in one of those urban apartments that has like that small sink that doesn't actually have any space next to it. The best part is that Quip starts at just $25, far less expensive than most electric toothbrushes. The way to get started with them is at Get Quip. You want to get Quip. Getquip.com/capspace. And you can get your first refill pack free. Getquip.com/capspace. These are, remember, /capspace, because we talk about it all the time here on the program. GetQuip.com/capspace. Let me know what that /capspace URL that you came from us. So here's what the Warriors did. This is one of those ones where it just seems like these guys are always there, but they had to re-sign Steph Curry. They did so without giving him a player option or a no trade. I thought that no trade was pretty important because now nobody else can agitate for a no trade either if Steph Curry didn't get one. They brought back KD for $25 million. He could have gotten 34, and that obviously was a coup, although they squandered some of that. Andre Iguodala returned for 3 years, $48 million. Sean Livingston, 3 years, $24 million. Last year, only 2 years guaranteed. Zaza Pachulia, David West, JaVale McGee all were brought back at the center position. The only player they really lost of any consequence was Ian Clark. I gave them an A at the time. So did you. How does that look in retrospect?
I would be fine with them in A, just because I had forgotten how active that offseason was. And, you know, they won the NBA championship. They needed Iguodala. They needed Sean Livingston. Those guys were important at various stages in the process for it. But I moved it to an A- because of just what a disaster Nick Young was for the mid-level exception. He was basically a non-factor in their playoff run. And giving him the full mid-level forced the Warriors to only give Jordan Bell 2 years. It was a great move to buy the pick using the now famous cash considerations to get Jordan Bell in the first place. But paralleling Zaza Pachulia the year before, they could only give him with Patrick Bracaw, they could only give Bell a 2-year contract. And it looks now like he's a whole lot better than a minimum guy. So having the cost control and certainty and all that for an extra year would have been really useful. Wait,
what are you talking about with Pachulia the year before?
Okay, so they gave Pachulia the full room exception.
Yeah, but that was only 2 years.
The year that they signed KD.
So it wouldn't have been any...
Right. That's
they didn't have
the
option for the third year.
They didn't have the option. Okay, anyway. So it's still with Jordan Bell, they did. And so I think they did lose something there. Another one that I want to mention is that they signed Quinn Cook to a two-way contract, that he was one of the players they chose for that. He ended up getting moved into the one of the 15 after Omri Caspi didn't work out. And so they get, you know, some credit for Cook being good enough to move into that spot and some demerit for Caspi being so bad that they were able to cut him without consequence. So I say an A- just because they didn't end up feeling the opportunity cost, but there was one with Nick Young. And so I didn't want to give a straight A.
Yeah. And we saw that where with Young, that was one where at the time we thought it was really a waste. We given them an A anyway. We really liked Caspi. That ended up being a disaster because he just decided to stop shooting three pointers. You know, KD taking less was great, but that was really more his decision than the Warriors. The Jordan Bell thing was great. I totally agree with you on that. I actually lowered them down to a B, especially because, I mean, look at how terribly they played when Steph Curry was out. It really, like, this team should have won more than 58 games. And people said, oh, you know, they didn't try, blah, blah. And, you know, that was true to some extent. I mean, and also because Draymond Green and Iguodala just, you know, were not playing at the same level of intensity and also, you know, weren't being used the way they'd be used in the playoffs, right? Like, with Steph out, they weren't going to just start Andre Iguodala at point guard and Draymond Green at center the way they did it to really jumpstart things against San Antonio. But to just have like no other shooting on the roster that was playable outside of Durant, Steph, and Klay and be last in the NBA in bench threes, like they really could have done better. And it didn't take a genius to see that Nick Young wasn't going to work out. I mean, I gave him an A anyway because they brought everyone back and they were able to... you know, do so without killing the tax. And we thought that Caspi would be good and we thought that Bell was going to be good, and he was. Another thing that they did, which is probably part of the offseason, is declining the option on Kevon Looney and exercising it on Damian Jones, neither of which really looked like the right decision. They're lucky to be able to bring back Looney for the minimum because it was such a bad market, but had it not been for that, Looney, it probably would have ended up leaving, although there wasn't much reason to think at the time that Looney would deserve to have his fourth year option picked up. So I moved them down to a B just because Young and Caspi were so bad. I think also Livingston is looking like a pretty big overpay at this point at $8 million a year. I'm not sure if he had other offers there, and especially, you know, even the partial guarantee in the last year. Iguodala, you know, he's still worth his contract when healthy. Just the question is how often that's going to be. And that third year for him, they're probably going to have to make some kind of an adjustment there if, you know, Klay Thompson comes back at anything close to the max. So down to a B. I know they won the championship, but I felt that it wasn't necessarily because of some of those moves they made. Maybe I'm just being too harsh on the Nick Young thing, but that was one that just killed me all year.
Yeah, it certainly did. But I think Curry for the not having a player option in a no trade is a more significant thing for like the arc of the franchise, and actually was probably a tartar negotiation. I mean, depending on how Curry was approaching, I mean, it's massively significant for the future of the franchise. Yeah. And with Livingston, my assumption is that
how about not bringing back six centers? Like, do you really need Zaza and David West and JaVale McGee and Kevon Looney and Jordan Bell and Damian Jones?
The answer was apparently yes.
Six centers on the roster. But sorry, I was just like, I looked at all of the people they re-signed. I was like, wait a minute, the last three of these guys are centers. Like,
And they drafted one. I mean, I don't think they expected Jordan Bell to be as immediately productive as he was. But still, and Damian Jones, maybe they expected him to be more productive than he was. So it kind of balances out to a certain degree there. Yeah, and they ended up just, you know, paying the tax on all that kind of stuff. But so what I was saying with Livingston is I have no inside information, but my instinct is that he is not going to get that third year, at least with the Warriors. Maybe they could, you know, trade him or cut him or whatever they're going to do there. So that couple million is going to, you know, that still counts for everything. And if they pay him that, it's going to be really costly just with the way the repeater tax and everything else.
They trade him, they probably are going to end up having to guarantee his contract. It makes it difficult to trade him. I mean, if he only, he would count $2 million outgoing.
Well, or if they could just trade him to a team with cap space, and there are going to be a lot of those.
Yeah, maybe, and then just pay his salary, and they cut him immediately, and then they still have the cap space. I mean, that's a possibility. Right. Let's move to their chief competition now. The Houston Rockets, recall that they made the trade for Chris Paul, sending out Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Sand Decker, Montrezl Harrell, and that was a trade.
Oh, yes. And their own first round pick.
Right. Yes, thank you. Which ended up becoming Omari Spellman in the trusty care of the Atlanta Hawks after the Clippers moved it to get off of Jamal Crawford. I gave them an A- at the time, if only because I felt perhaps they gave up a little bit too much in that trade. But I mean, they won 65 games. They almost beat the Warriors. I'd move them up to an A+ from that A-. PJ Tucker was outstanding. Luke Mbamute for the moon was great. Tarek Black, really, you know, using the BAA on him, maybe they could have done a little bit better there because he really was unnecessary for the way they wanted to play in the playoffs. Maybe they could have gotten someone who would have helped. And then another interesting one here is they didn't give Clint Capella an extension, and they ended up getting him for a great deal, which we now know that was probably the right decision, and not extend him, because I'm sure that his demands at the time were, even at that point, a little bit more lucrative.
Yeah, so I gave them an A because I don't give A pluses, but it's basically, I mean, they had the best thing there. And remember that they went from being number 3 in cleaning the glass's net rating 2 years ago to number 1 without any cap space and while being hard capped. Like, that's a really impressive double to do, where you have no flexibility, basically. They did have a lot of players on team-friendly contracts, which is how they made the Chris Paul trade happen, but it seems like there might have been an understanding of what he would get in the future. They ended up paying him that money. But yeah, I mean, the moves that Morey made outside of that, particularly Mbamute and PJ Tucker, both look good. Still a lot of money for PJ Tucker, to be sure, but he more than lived up to that contract in his first year. Yeah, Tarek Black, I think one of the ways that they could have benefited from that was just getting another guy who was capable with the ball in his hands, you know, as a...
Yeah, a backup point guard, you know, might have been useful there.
Yeah, it would have helped reduce the strain. I think it's actually a missed opportunity that they had a little bit again so far this offseason. Maybe Melton will do a little bit of that, but we'll have to see how he actually does. Another guy we should mention is Nene. There was also that drama with the over 38 rule, which has kind of fallen by the wayside from that summer. They brought back Troy Williams, and then that weird thing with Bobby Brown where they like kind of signed him and cut him because they needed the roster spot. But this is overall, I mean, it's not a perfect offseason, but it was an absolutely excellent one and a great evaluation of where the league was going. There was that, the wording that was out there was that Daryl Morey was obsessed with the Warriors, and that obsession was well placed. They were the team that Houston had to knock off to make it to the finals. They were the best team in the regular season. And even though you could argue that the Warriors were an Andre Iguodala injury away from winning the series in shorter games, the Rockets were also a Chris Paul injury away from being the significant favorites to win the NBA championship.
So the Clippers, they made that aforementioned Paul trade. They brought in Miloš Teodosic on that 2-year, $12 million deal with the creative partial guarantee and player option in the second year, but he's going to return now. He's been guaranteed for the season. Getting Lou Williams was awesome. He played at a near all-star level. They signed Willie Reed. He was shipped out in the Blake Griffin deal, didn't end up doing much. Sindarius Thornwell showed something defensively as the season went on. Juwan Evans, not as much, but that's about what your batting average is going to be on picks in the late 30s. And then the big thing that we haven't really discussed was retaining Blake Griffin at a max contract, 5 years, and about $170 million. That's a deal that will pay Griffin. Actually, I think it was even more than $170 million. But that's a deal that will pay Griffin $39 million in the 2021. I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it. The 21-22 season. And yes, they were able to move on from him. They got back Avery Bradley, who they actually still have on the team now, amazingly. And they got that lottery pick from the Pistons, but I still find it difficult to laud the decision to bring Griffin back, even so.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So I said a year ago that this was the hardest offseason to grade because they did the big things wrong, but then they got Chris Paul and they got value. I mean, remember, at the time, we were saying that they got more value for Chris Paul than the Pacers did for Paul George or the Bulls did for Jimmy Butler. Yeah. It ended up being that Victor Oladipo had this fabulous season and went through that. But, I mean, they still got a nice return. And Chris Paul had the ability to be an unrestricted free agent. And they got back all these things of value, many of which actually converted into other pieces. Montrezl Harrell, they re-signed at a reasonable contract. Lou Williams, they extended on a reasonable contract. Both of those those new contracts aren't in the offseason grade, but getting guys that you could eventually retain at a good price certainly is. And so, yeah, it's a hard one because, I don't give them credit for signing a bad contract they eventually got out of. So I moved them from a C- to a C-. I kept it the same because it's just weird. Like, I think the Chris Paul acquisitions maybe even look a little bit better now. I thought Lou Williams had a really nice year for them. Harrell fit in well as a backup center. You know, it was kind of a question mark because he hadn't had that great opportunity for the Rockets yet. But the Gallo contract is still awful.
Well, don't forget, Danny. To sign that contract, they had to first trade that pick that they got from Houston to Atlanta to get rid of Jamal Crawford so that they would have room under the hard cap to do the sign and trade.
Yeah, like this.
Matching salary for Gallo to come in as well.
Sure, because they ended up structuring that as a three-team sign and trade, all those shenanigans, which also hard capped them. But so I could see going lower than a C- just because the big things were so wrong. I mean, Gallinari on a three-year contract, Blake Griffin on a max contract, but I just kind of ended up in the same place anyway. And I as you said, like the Tatum contract, it was interestingly structured. I thought it worked out reasonably well for both sides. So go with that. And another thing that I praised at the time that ended up not mattering was Willie Reed for the minimum. No, Montrezl Harrell filled that role fine.
I actually moved them up. I had given them a C. You'd given them a C minus. I actually moved them up to a B. And while you still wouldn't do the Griffin contract over again, I think, because, I mean, there's still just such a big risk there that they wouldn't be able to trade it, that he would get injured, that they wouldn't have to give up assets to get off of him. I mean, I think what they were able to trade back from him was, you know, a very high percentile outcome based on the things that could have happened there. But you have to give them a little bit of credit because there was at least someone who was willing to take that contract, bad though we think it is. And then, you know, Lou Williams, I mean, getting a guy who played at a near all-star level for someone who was just going to leave anyway, I mean, that was pretty fantastic. And we'll see with Gallo. I mean, obviously that turned out absolutely as poorly as it possibly could have last year with all the injuries that he had. But, you know, he might still contribute. And they weren't really going to have much cap space this offseason anyway. I think they did a wise job of not trying to bring back DeAndre Jordan. And then next summer, they're still going to just have armloads of cap space, even with Gallo on the books. And, you know, worst case, if he's really causing them trouble, they could stretch him in that last year. And he might contribute to them this season as well. I mean, getting hard capped was a problem. I mean, as you'll recall, they were really playing it pretty fast and loose with the two-way guys, just to try to avoid having to get someone else in there that would have taken them up against the hard cap or the tax. It was actually really more the tax, I'm sorry, than it was the hard cap. But I mean, this team was just better than I think anyone thought they would be. And they have totally clean books going forward. They got some assets that are going to help them win games, as you mentioned, for the next few years. So that's why I moved them up to a B. I think they've done a pretty good job. Is that really weird to you that I'm moving them up that much, or do you understand that?
Well, I think that one of the things that you're kind of giving them credit for, I guess, that I'm not, is the idea of identifying that they should keep on trying to win now. Like, if they had moved on, like, they could have gotten an asset for DeAndre Jordan. It's not necessarily that. They tried to do two things. They got all these guys back for Chris Paul, but they weren't a playoff team. They ended up not making the playoffs, and so that fits in with what it sounds like their ownership wanted. But, you know, a clear-eyed direction, they could have positioned themselves even better for what's coming than what happened. I mean, getting Tobias Harris and some of the other stuff with the Blake Griffin, you know, they ended up making it work, but I think they could have done more with this.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that Griffin trade really was pretty damn good. I mean, to get Avery Bradley, who's still going to be on the team, and that pick, and Tobias Harris, I mean, that was pretty good. Let's move on to the Lakers. I had initially, and we've talked so much about what their moves were on, and we need to go over it. I'd give them an A- initially, so had you. What is your new grade for them?
So I'm going to give them an A. And it's interesting because I originally, like when I did the regrade, I gave them an A- on the idea, actually, that my biggest criticism, as it is right now, and of course this can change, is drafting Lonzo Ball over Jason Tatum. That was a move I completely supported at the time, but Jason Tatum was awesome last year.
Them the initial A-, Lonzo draft, that wasn't part of it, right? Like you were on board with the Lonzo pick, and Lonzo was good in summer league.
No, that wasn't the minus.
Yeah. No, what was the minus? Since we're such negative people.
I actually think they, so at the time, I'm reading, the benefit of writing a paragraph for each one of these is remembering it, was that I think that my criticism was that they cut bait too early on D'Angelo Russell. We still don't know that because it was such a weird year for him. But the idea basically being that they did that to get off of Mozgov's contract before they knew what they needed. And, you know, it worked out. They had enough space for LeBron, everything that happened there. I thought maybe they could do something else with D'Angelo Russell. I think that worked out pretty well for them. But the reason that I moved it from an A- to an A is actually not the Lonzo part of it. It's Kuzma and Hart, and then the consistency of vision to maintain the cap space. I mean, I think those are such big elements to get right, getting two at least rotation players, maybe starters. We'll see where those guys go in the future. In the 20s, one of which you got as a return in a trade where you sent other, like the principals were actually going from your team. That's a really impressive move for me. And, you know, it's a hard one in certain ways to grade because, you know, like there are still so many swirling questions with Lonzo, but if you hit on picks that well, and Lopez and KCP, they were on expiring contracts, they did their job. I think that, like, that's the consistency of vision part, was we want to have enough flexibility to make sure that we can go after max guys, and guess what? They got LeBron James.
Well, there's some interesting stuff in the relationships here too, right? KCP on the one-year deal, many speculated that because he is also with Clutch Sports, that was kind of something to clear the LZ, hung out with a bunch of guys who used to be in the military, so I'm using military terms now, the landing zone for LeBron. And now they still actually have KCP back as well. They also, though, did not extend Julius Randle. They were reportedly offered a deal that started right at his cap hold of $12.4 million. And recall, of course, that Randle and Paul George have the same agent, and the Lakers did not even get a meeting with Paul George, perhaps in part because of their fractious relationship with Aaron Mintz, who is the agent for both Randle and George. So maybe if they extend Randle, if they take that offer, or maybe they negotiate a little bit. They wanted to keep that space open, obviously, and move on from him because they were hoping to get two max guys. But maybe if they take care of Randle, that helps them with Paul George. I wouldn't normally suggest operating that way because I think generally when you try to pay guys more than you think they should be paid just because, like, oh, we're going to make his agent feel good and then he'll do some favor for us later. You know, I don't know how often that actually seems to work out. It seems to lead to mistakes more than it leads to getting the big score in free agency. But that's an interesting one to think about. But nonetheless, like you, I moved them up to an A. I mean, Lonzo over Tatum does not look good, in part because of these injuries that Lonzo had. But it wasn't realistic, again, for them to take anyone other than Lonzo there. Nobody was saying to take Tatum over Lonzo at the time. I still think Lonzo can be a very good player. And then getting Hart and Kuzma at the picks that they got them were both great steals. So that looks awesome. And then when you look at how much teams, I mean, we've seen teams be basically unable to get off of the sour 16s contracts with 2 years left on them even now. So to have been able to do that and also get back the pick that became Kuzma and Brook Lopez, who helped them this year, all at the price of Russell, who, you know, you thought they gave up on him too early. I didn't necessarily feel that way. I think I've been lower on him, and then he struggled with his health and didn't look great last year. You know, I think that's looking like a win, one trade for the Lakers, especially to get that extra pick that became Kuzma. So yeah, I think you can't really do anything other than an A, and it would even be an A+ had it not been for Lonzo just not working out quite as well as Tatum.
I also want to mention that Jason Tatum would have been an awesome fit next to LeBron had they been able to do that. I mean, they didn't obviously know that was coming, but now knowing what we know, incidentally, it would have been nasty.
All right, one more read here before we move on to the Grizzlies. And that is from Helix Sleep, the mattress that I sleep on every single night. We now actually own two of them. And everyone is unique when it comes to sleeping. That is certainly the case for me, certainly the case for my fiance. Helix Sleep has developed 9 different mattresses that are tailored to specific body types and sleep preferences. You go to our vanity URL, that's what they call it in the industry, helixsleep.com/capspace, and take their 2-minute sleep quiz. And they'll match you to a mattress that's perfect for you. you, contours your body to provide unprecedented comfort and better sleep. 36% of Helix Sleep customers, including me, for example, report better sleep after switching to their customized mattress from Helix Sleep. And all of these other box mattress retailers that only give you one mattress and certainly don't match your body to it. I tried one of those and it was really uncomfortable sleeping on it. And then we moved on to Helix Sleep instead. And Helix Sleep is offering a great deal here too with that helixsleep.com/capspace URL, $125 off your mattress order, depending on which one you get. You can get up to $125 off your mattress order. And whether you're a side sleeper, you sleep too hot, like a plush bed, a firm bed, they've got the mattress that will fit you just right. And you can get up to $125 off at helixsleep.com/capspace. Make sure you use that Make sure to use that /capspace URL to get your up to $125 off and let them know that you came from us. So the Grizz, despite a disastrous season, I really didn't downgrade them that much. I'd given them a B, but we were incomplete because we didn't know what was going to happen with Tony Allen. Didn't know what was going to happen with Jamichael Green in restricted free agency. They were up against the tax, but I actually only downgraded them to a C because I didn't think that the reasons they failed last year were because of their offseason.
I had them at a C minus originally, and I upgraded them to a C. Basically,
that's remarkable.
So they did very little last offseason, partially because they had these constraints with spending. And Tyreek Evans was a great signing. Ben McLemore was an awful signing, and McLemore was signed for more years than Tyreek. So you could say that's a downside. But I mean, Tyreek, that worked out well. And while I have my misgivings that they should have traded him, that is obviously not a part of these grades. And
worth remembering, they got Tyreek for the BAE. $3.3 million, and you know, he looked like he was almost out of the league. I mean, he was just total filler in that Cousins trade going to Sacramento, and then he just, you know, kind of hung out there, didn't do much that was incredibly impressive.
And they also gave, so they had previously drafted Rade Zagorich, but they actually paid him, they signed him that year, and he was so bad they cut him the same summer, so he didn't play, he didn't end up playing for them.
Yeah, he's and still Ivan on their Rabb, cap for this year.
He is. Ivan Rabb, they drafted over, I'm going to mention this trio more than a few times, of Ojale, Bell, and Bolden. I mean, Bolden is by far the weakest of those three, but I think Rabb is substantially worse than all those guys. They were drafted right after him.
They seem to like Rabb. We'll see what he ends up doing. I mean, they
do. And Dylan Brooks played more minutes than any other rookie, so that's pretty impressive, and they drafted him even later. He was in the 40s. Jamichael Green's contract was fine. You know, they didn't get a lot of present value because they were so bad last year, but I thought it was a reasonable contract. It's nothing too bad
there. 2 years, $16 million for Jamichael Green.
The other part that I want to talk about a little bit, because it gets lost because he wasn't a part of the season for most of it last year. But I still think the Wayne Seldon contract was a really good one for them. I think Seldon is one of their better perimeter players. I hope that he actually gets minutes this year. And so by getting him for a, I believe it was a non-guaranteed or a lightly guaranteed second season, I think he's restricted this upcoming summer. But either way, just getting him on a team-friendly two-year deal for a player who would be a rotation-level guy on a better team, but they've been shallow on the perimeter this last year and then probably this year, even though they added Temple and Kyle Anderson. I still really like that deal.
They also deserve credit still for moving on from Zach Randolph, who signed for 2 years, $24 million with the Kings. Certainly not giving him that contract or anything close to it was the right play. They also moved on from Tony Allen, who, you know, looks like he's done now at this point. He signed in New Orleans and wasn't able to stay healthy. McLemore, as you mentioned, was a complete disaster. We could probably throw just dumping Wade Baldwin before the season started as part of their offseason. That doesn't look very smart. They went the short term thinking that Mario Chalmers would contribute. He really did not. And Baldwin is looking like he might still be a player. You know, they drafted him, I think, 17th back in 2016, gave up on him after a year. You know, so very short-term thinking there. So I went with the C. I had initially given them a B minus. I mean, I think really just McLemore being such a rough use of resources ultimately is probably why the downgrade. And then, but I mean, they were never going to be any good with Gasol playing a lot worse and with Conley missing the entire season, regardless of what they had done last offseason.
Let's move on to a team that actually did a ton in the 2017 offseason, the Minnesota Timberwolves. The biggest part of it at the time that we recorded this was the massive Jimmy Butler deal, where they traded Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and then the first round pick swap, where they gave up the pick that became Lauri Markkanen and got the pick that became Justin Patton. They also signed Jeff Teague, Taj Gibson, Jamal Crawford, and then they also traded Ricky Rubio for a first round pick. And then the part that was not included in our offseason off-season grades and is a significant part of the regrade is giving Andrew Wiggins a max extension.
Woof. Yeah, it'd be very interesting to think of what Wiggins might have gotten as a restricted free agent this season, or even if they had just negotiated with them a little bit instead of their owner coming out and saying, oh, hey, you know, we're going to give him the max extension as soon as he comes into my office and promises he's going to work really hard, then we'll give it to him. I'd give them a B-plus initially. I loved the Butler trade, thought that that was an absolute steal, and I thought Teague was fine. You didn't like Teague as much as I recall. Taj Gibson, we didn't like that one. 2 years, $28 million. Also, Jamal Crawford with their room exception, although I think he actually did them a favor by opting out this year of his over $4 million that he was due. Justin Patton looks like, yeah, he's been injured, so it's a little bit unfair, but looks like an absolutely awful pick. Right now, they already have way too many centers that they're paying way too much money to. But a lot of this changed. I moved them down to a C+, and especially because of that Wiggins extension. And Gibson was much better than I thought he would be. I mean, they played really well when he was on the floor. They played really well with their starters out there, despite the lack of spacing. The lack of spacing killed them in the playoffs, of course, against Houston, where they just could not get any room to work. They also traded away Ricky Rubio right before the league year turned over to get that OKC lottery protected pick. They turned that into Josh Okogie, the number 20 overall pick in 2018. I thought that was a good piece of work there. So with all that, I'm at a C+, and it's, I mean, you have to remember, okay, they went from 31 to whatever it was, 47 wins last year, and probably could have won more if Butler had been healthy. You know, looked like they're on track to be the third or fourth seed in the East before that Butler injury. But in the long term, especially now with this Wiggins extension, you wonder, you know, this is supposed to be like the most talented young team in basketball. Part of that was just because people overrated Wiggins, you would think. But it looks like this team really has nowhere to go now, Danny.
I moved them from an A- to a C, and it is unbelievable that they moved that much without the Jimmy Butler trade looking any worse for them. This is not a circumstance where that sometimes happens. Like, we'll talk about OKC in a little bit, where the ground changes underneath the team's feet on the biggest move that they made, and so they go into that. You know, Chris Dunn was better than I thought he was going to be. Zach LaVine was still coming back from injury, had an awful year, got a ludicrous contract. So like that part of it, they come out of that part of this trade looking really good overall. But then we can't lose sight of the Justin Patton pick. There were good players on the board then. Yes, 16 is not a super valuable place.
Yeah, I mean, they're even, you know, good. If you had to have a fucking center, there are like good centers that they could have gotten.
John Collins, Jared Allen, but OG Anunoby, even Terrence Ferguson would have helped out this team. I mean, just as a long-term
piece maybe.
Of like,
I don't know about that.
He wouldn't help them out last year. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, just as a guy. I mean, I'd rather have him than Justin Patton for sure, knowing what we know right now. And Jamal Crawford was another kind of really good symptom of what was going on there, because while Jamal Crawford is not a terrible basketball player, he did not cure what ailed that team. And that was a big concern for me, that, you know, you have these limited team building tools outside of the trade and, you know, the draft picks that they had. And so,
and Jamal Crawford, by the way, had the worst, I think the worst defensive RPM in the entire league. It was like -5.45. Like he just, they were so bad defensively when they had any unit out there other than their starters, and Crawford was a huge part of that.
Yeah, and then the Wiggins contract is just a disaster. I mean, and one of the notes that I put in there this time is, I wonder how this is going to look, how we'll think about Minnesota's 2017 offseason if Jimmy Butler leaves next summer, because they don't have a ton of flexibility to replace him. And now, you know, we know Jimmy Butler is not going to sign an extension this year. That is not a surprise. That is not damning or guarantee that he's going to leave or anything silly like that. But this starts to look really different if it was still a worthwhile gamble. It's still a great trade. But if they don't have the ability to pivot after this, it was because of the rush to kind of fill in all these gaps and to pay Andrew Wiggins before they had to, because they were worried about something. That will be the reason why that, you know, that happens. And it's not damning Minnesota to be the worst team in the league or anything like that. But I think a lot about teams that miss opportunities, and it is not done yet, but it seems like that's where this is going.
Yeah, maybe you could say that they shot their shot a little bit too early by cashing in those assets for Butler. You know, if they had just made the number 7 pick, now they probably would have paid Zach LaVine too. You know, I mean, I don't think that they would have actually, if they'd paid LaVine and they'd paid Andrew Wiggins, they wouldn't have necessarily had much more flexibility. They'd still have Jang on the book. So, I mean, I think it was the right decision to trade for Butler. I mean, they did win more games. They did get the NBA back.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not questioning that part at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, it's a question that's worth asking. I mean, really what they're going to have to do is just, you know, banking on the same thing they've been banking on ever since since Karl-Anthony Towns got to town, which is, hey, we're going to just play better defensively with the internal improvement. Let's move on to the Pels now. I'd give them a D last year, as did you. What was your initial rationale behind that D grade, and where are you putting them now?
The two big things Minnesota did last year were retain Drew Holiday. Sorry, yeah, that team.
We use so many pronouns. The one time we actually use a proper name, we have to make sure it gets.
So they gave Drew Holiday a big deal, you know, big contract, and then they used a lot of their remaining flexibility to sign Rajon Rondo. And their biggest needs were shooting and ball handlers beyond Drew Holiday, and obviously Rondo doesn't add much in the way of shooting. He did actually shoot a better percentage from three last year, but we saw those issues come to the fore in their series against the Warriors. And so I gave them a D at the time because I just thought it was a poor identification. And so I moved that all the way up. This is my biggest upgrade in the Western Conference, move them from a D to a B because Rondo worked out far better than expected. Drew Holiday looks like he's a lot more likely at this point to be worth the money, assuming he stays healthy. He had a wonderful playoffs, but I thought he had a pretty good year overall. And then the other part that changed, though this is not necessarily due to their offseason, is that the huge luxury tax crunch that we thought was impending for this team is now gone because of the whole DeMarcus Cousins thing going the way that it did. So those are important parts. They also, you know, they lost a bunch of guys that were parts of the rotation, like Dante Cunningham and Tim Frazier. They actually, I think, would have been better off keeping Quinn Cook and not signing Ian Clark. The Warriors and the Pels basically swapped those two guys. But also, I like Darius Miller as a contract. And then the other thing we have to mention is Frank Jackson. Jackson has, because involved in everything, they moved up with cash to move up to 31, drafted Frank Jackson over the aforementioned Bell, Ogilvy, and Bolden trio. And he missed time with injury, but I thought he was worse than those guys back then too.
Yeah, I mean, he basically missed the entire season and he had another procedure as well. I'll second everything that you said because I also gave him a D initially and I moved them up to a B. But those who are like, how could you, you know, they won 47 games, they didn't even have Cousins. Well, worth remembering that they also had to give up a first round pick to get Nikola Mirotic, and that Mirotic was a big part of why they made the playoffs. And that wasn't the result of this offseason. So they certainly exceeded
expectations. And they had Cousins for half the year too.
Yeah, and people like, oh, they were hitting their stride with Cousins. Yeah, I mean, they had won a bunch of close games in a row. I think the whole idea of, oh man, they were really going awesome with Cousins right before he got hurt, you know, was true to some degree, but not necessarily as much as some people say. But just worth noting that this offseason was part of why they exceeded expectations. And much as I believe Rondo is overrated, he played well for the money that they gave him this season. He helped them win some games, even if I thought he played too much and they should have gone with Drew more at point guard. But nonetheless, got to move him up to a B here. And, you know, and even with Holiday, the fact that, as you mentioned, that contract looks better is a good thing. The Thunder is a very, very interesting one. And we have to mention it. You know, I give him an A+. You, as the Soviet judge who doesn't give A+, gave them an A. But what we didn't know at the time was that they would trade for Carmelo Anthony. That trade was Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, and the Bulls' second rounder this year, which ended up being pretty good. I forget exactly what. Oh, it was Mitchell Robinson who ended up getting drafted there by the Knicks. But where would you put them after everything we know now, which we probably don't need to go over too much because we've discussed them ad nauseum, of course.
So I moved them down to a B+. This was another brutally hard offseason to grade because you have the combination of Oladipo emerging and Paul George resigning. So Presti made a massive bet on their culture and he won. That part of it, they also could have really used Sabonis last year. You know, I don't think, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
It's
not, it wasn't backup a bad center trade for them, was a problem for them. But they were always playing him at power forward. I mean, I don't think they even considered that he should play center, that's his position.
Yeah. And while I would say Melo didn't work out overall, it was totally a worthy gamble. We did not expect that season to go as it did. And the opportunity cost for them was not high. I mean, Enes Kanter was, you know, he wasn't a playoff player for them anyway. McDermott, you know, maybe he would have been a small part of the rotation that second round pick. So you have that. Then you have a couple other big pieces I want to mention. So Andre Roberson, 3 years, $30 million. I still think that's a reasonable contract.
Sure.
like the injury that happened to him was a freak occurrence. You know, that wasn't, it didn't confirm any concerns that we had.
He didn't have much injury history prior to that.
Yeah, exactly. Patterson had an awful year. Yeah. I would place a lot of the blame on that, on injury. And that to me, that's a big part of why it's a B+ instead of being something like an A-, is because that really didn't work out and it's going to be there for a couple of years. It was a little bit unforeseeable. And then the other one I want to give them some credit for is Ray Felton. Ray Felton, at the minimum, good backup. Remember how bad that situation was the year before? It was a part of how Russell Westbrook won the MVP, was because Samaje Christian had been, and the, you know, the ghost of Ronnie Price's cap hold had basically been their backup point guards for the year before. And so getting Felton was a really big help for them overall.
The Melo trade, worth noting that perhaps sealed the deal for Russell Westbrook re-signing on that designated player veteran extension. Oladipo, I mean, certainly Oladipo had maybe the greatest one season improvement in NBA history last year, or the most unexpected one season improvement in NBA history last year, and right up there with Jimmy Butler's 2014-15. And Sabonis, too, wasn't any good, you know, I think it's fair to note that, all those caveats aside, even with Paul George resigning, I think in terms of just what value do the Pacers get from the players versus what value do, or the players in their contracts versus what value do the Thunder get from the players and contracts involved, I think based on what we know now, and obviously this can change with, you know, any of these players getting hurt or taking a step back or whatever, but I would actually predict that the Pacers won that trade, just if you're looking at it purely. And so Victor Oladipo, very unlikely, if they had held on to him, that he would have played at the same level that he did in Indiana. But nonetheless, that is one way to look at this, of like, hey, you know what, maybe this should be downgraded a little bit. I mean, I think you can argue that Oladipo was better than Paul George last year. He's younger. He didn't just have off-season knee surgery, and he makes $20 million a year instead of Paul George going to be making $35 million a year. And then also Sabonis was involved as well. Ultimately, I gave them a B-. In part because of Patterson. I mean, he had surgery before the season. I think it probably was pretty clear that he was damaged goods. I mean, we loved that contract, but there's a reason he was available for that price, that he just, you know, if he could have been the same player he was in Toronto, I think much would have been different for this team last year, and maybe even going forward as well. One other thing worth noting, too, is that they exercised the fourth year team option on Jeremy Grant. So he became unrestricted this year, but they were able to retain him at $9 million a year.
Though I'm betting they could have gotten him substantially cheaper if he had been restricted last year, even though there was a lot more money in 2017. That would have come at the cost of luxury tax, but theoretically, knowing what we know now, they would have traded some of that cost for this year when the team is even more expensive.
Yeah, and also, I mean, worth noting with that Melo trade, I mean, they got Dennis Schroeder now, which I think of as a negative contract, and they had to give up a first-round pick in 2022 to get off of Melo. Now, it's relatively well-protected, but, I mean, they traded for someone. They gave up players who could play a little bit. It would have helped them to some degree. They got much worse circumstances financially, but, again, maybe that's what caused Westbrook to resign. Who knows? I think he probably would have resigned anyway, but... So yeah, down to a B-.
Let's move on. Yeah, and I moved them down to a B+. Phoenix Suns, the biggest thing they did was drafting Josh Jackson. They also drafted Devon Reed, brought in Mike James, who ended up being gone. You know, he was a two-way success story and then was gone. The other big thing that wasn't counted then was re-signing TJ Warren. They gave him 4 years and $50 million on an extension, which is kicking in now. And then they also got Alex Len, took his qualifying offer. Alan Williams, they gave that three-year $15 million contract to, but those second 2 years were non-guaranteed. The last two years were non-guaranteed, so they ended up letting him go. What did you give them? I'm trying to remember.
This was one where I looked at my grades and I was like, what the fuck was I thinking giving them a B-, because I didn't like Josh Jackson. I've always been very consistent on that. Now, Josh Jackson was even worse than I thought he would be, and his summer league performance, which we'll get to in a later podcast, was not encouraging. You gave them a C-, but my rationale at the time was I just really liked them not giving out any bad contracts. This was before the Warren extension, but the Warren extension to me is kind of neutral. You know, I mean, I would like to see what he would be on a real team that has some shooting, where he can kind of focus on scoring, but he's probably not a starter with his shooting limitations. You know, he's got to be more of a bench scorer type of guy. So that's probably not a movable contract. Fails the Nene test, as you would say. I liked what they did with Len, just making him take the qualifying offer, not giving him any any money. I think that was a great idea. But I mean, really, so they deserve some credit for like not screwing up. But I mean, the Jackson pick, I thought it was bad at the time. I mean, I liked any of probably four or five guys better. Smith, I liked Fox better than him. I liked Isaac better than him. I liked Markkanen even better than him. And you know, I think that they passed probably on Isaac. I mean, I think they really liked Josh Jackson anyway, but you know, they passed probably on Isaac and Markkanen because, you know, oh, we already got Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender. Well, both those guys look pretty terrible. And, you know, so you passed on guys who could play because in favor of guys who couldn't play at that position.
Well, and they still need a point guard.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, I mean, like, how good would
even though wings are the most valuable position in the league right now, they actually have enough wings and they don't have point guards. And we'll see what ends up happening with their offense. I'm very interested in that.
There's just no reason to think that Jackson would be able to shoot. I mean, we've seen guys improve, but, you know, the bad free throw shooting, the form, the shot selection, I mean, there's just was not much reason to believe that he was going to be a solid shooter. And, you know, he plays hard, but he's a solid athlete. He's not really strong enough to guard like the biggest wing threats anyway. So my new grade is a D. You also made the comment, because I actually went back and listened to that very closely because I wanted to know what the hell I was thinking and give him a B-. You made the comment that they should have moved Eric Bledsoe. They actually ended up doing just that to the Bucks. They got a first-round pick. I think that looks like a fine trade. Another thing that we can throw in here, too, is they didn't fire Earl Watson. And then, you know, they obviously should have done that and then had a real coach for last year instead of Jay Triano, the interim. And then they also actually gave Ryan McDonough an extension, which, again, I've not been particularly impressed by his work. And it just, and then this year they decided to, you know, with all this powder they kept dry, they just go a 1-year, $15 million deal for Trevor Ariza, who plays the same position as like a bunch of these other guys that they're theoretically trying to develop. So they never seem to have any kind of a plan. It just totally vacillates from year to year. And so, you know, D.
And that was actually another of my big criticisms with that. I thought they didn't clarify where they were, that they kind of kept these veterans, but they weren't good enough to really compete. And it ended up being that those veterans like Jared Dudley and Tyson Chandler didn't push them up. You know, they still sucked. So I guess you could say that was, you know, it's kind of like some of these other teams where it's like, okay, well, that didn't hold them back in terms of getting a good draft pick. Like we talked about that with Dallas a little bit earlier, but it is still a criticism that I have for this team. It's just that they, you know, that they didn't really ever make sense of where they were. And it's not like those guys, they were certainly mentors, but I mean, you could do that with a lot of other roles. And they basically dumped Jared Dudley for a player who is worse and making slightly less money. And then Tyson Chandler still around, I guess he'll be the mentor. The other thing, drafting Devon Reed, he had a lost year due to injury, but he was another one of those guys taking over Ojale and Bell, who both of those guys could have helped them a lot. I mean, Jordan Bell would have been a very useful part of their big man rotation last year and actually plays intelligently, which would, I mean, who knows if that would have been brought out of him by Triano and Earl Watson, but at least he can play.
Yeah, so I mean, I couldn't believe I was like so high on the Suns. That was I won't make that mistake.
Oh, I don't think I mentioned it. So I moved them from a C- to a D.
Okay, well you were right on that one. And I guess, I mean, for me, it was just like they drafted. I mean, I think just right after the draft, I try to like, okay, yeah, you drafted a guy I didn't like, but sometimes our evaluations are wrong. You know, certainly with the Celtics drafting Tatum, who we didn't like that much, he obviously turned out to be awesome. I mean, you could certainly be wrong, but on that one, I was right about Jackson. I should have just put more weight onto that. The Blazers, they, you'll recall, made that trade of 15, which became Justin Jackson, and 20, which became Harry Giles, for Zach Collins, the number 10 overall selection. They also used the 26th pick on Caleb Swanigan. They had a brilliant trade, I thought, in moving Alan Crabb for Andrew Nicholson, whom they promptly stretched over 7 years. Crabb was making $18 million for three more years, Nicholson making $6 million for three more years. And they really didn't do much else other than that. I gave them a B because I thought they did well to get off of Crabb's contract. The only thing we can throw in there as well is they did not extend Yusuf Nurkic, which I think was a great idea. You know, they probably made an offer which is much bigger than what he ended up taking, that 4 for $48 million with only $40 million guaranteed. So I think that was pretty good. I am going to move them down to a C+ though from that B, just because I'm just not as big of a believer in the guys that they drafted. Even if they did get to the 3 seed, which was better than we thought they'd be, that wasn't because of any moves, the moves that they made last offseason.
Right. Right, and that's something that I wanted to talk about as well, is that they didn't really replace...
Oh, and I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Alan Krauss.
I misspoke. I gave them a C+ before, I moved them up to a B. I transposed that, sorry.
Interesting. Okay, because I gave them a B originally and moved them down to a C-. And the reason for that is because, you know, getting off of Krabs' money is fine. They didn't replace him, they still won 49 games, but they still have these weird depth issues. And both of their draft picks, I mean, Collins might end up working out. Swanigan was just a complete whiff to me in terms of understanding where the league is, understanding where they are. And so, like, they could have, you know, either Kuzma or Hart would have helped. And they need threes in the worst way. Neither of those guys is really a three, but they, you know, they're, and certainly they could have, I guess, Ojale or any number of guys. Collins, you know, Donovan Mitchell was available there. And while many, he was, again, not a guy that we watched film of, people had Collins in a higher tier than Donovan Mitchell. God, he would have been awesome there. And so for me, it ended up working out. They stayed healthy. Like, that was a big concern for me with the Blazers last year. It will be again this year whenever we get to that, because they just don't have a lot of depth. So if, like, CJ or Dame, heaven forbid, misses time, they just can't replace those guys. And they've kind of been able to survive. They've been able to avoid those pitfalls over the last couple of years. And so for me, that's overall, that's, you know, a missed opportunity. They moved up to get, they had those three picks and consolidated into 10 and then they kept the Swanigan pick that wasn't included in the trade to get up and get Collins. So yeah, I think this was a series of missed opportunities, even though I do like the Alan Crabb circumstance for them.
Yeah, I think if you want to put more of a weight on the draft, you know, I still think Collins could be good to some degree, although now they've re-signed Nurkic, so you use the number 10 pick on a guy who's going to be a backup for you, or they're going to trade Nurkic. I mean, I did not extending Nurkic, I thought was really good. I'm giving some good weight to that. I thought that the Crabb trade was really brilliant. I mean, they're in just such a bad situation.
Yeah, and it was another one kind of like we talked about with the Clippers, where there might have only been one team that could make that, would have made that deal. They found that team, sought them out, and made it happen.
So, and I mean, they got to the 3 seed last year. They had a very nice year. So yeah, it wasn't because of some of the stuff that they did last offseason, but to shed that money and still be as good as they were was useful. And then it's an interesting question of this. I think especially the later you get in the draft, it's much harder to be critical of certain picks. I actually had a debate with a Twitter follower whose name unfortunately escapes me at this point, but about he was saying, hey, you know what, like, you can't say, oh, they still had these next five guys who were good picks at the time, when, you know, you have to just say, hey, they didn't do well here, but, like, what would the average of the 26th pick in Swanigan have been? And I just understand that argument. You can't just cherry pick that, like, oh yeah, in the next 20 picks there are five guys, and just say every team that didn't get one of those five guys should have drafted him. Like, you can't say that. But especially if you're saying at the time, hey, you know what, Caleb Swanigan just doesn't have a place in the modern NBA. Like, what does he do? If you're saying that when the guy is drafted, and Collins, you know, he can shoot, he's mobile, but, you know, as a 4.5, when they already had a long-term player at center, you wonder about it as well. You know, so those are ones, if it's kind of a head scratcher at the time, I think you're allowed to say that, especially if we were saying, hey, you know what, you know, I think Bell, and a newbie, you know, Mitchell, I will freely admit I wasn't as high on, so it's harder for me to say that. But I mean, if we're talking about guys that just, like, didn't look good even at the time that they were picked, you know, I feel more comfortable casting those kinds of aspersions.
Right, and the positive case for Caleb Swanigan is really wanting. This is different than taking somebody
Same
and it
TJ
not working
Lee,
out.
Right, like okay, yeah. Let's say this guy does exactly what you're saying he's supposed to be able to do, right? Because that's, you know, that's the two components of the draft. One is, all right, what do we think this guy can be, and then number two is, all right, does he actually grow into that, right? And so you could at least answer if the first question isn't something that's valuable, then, like, why even take the guy, in my opinion? You know, I mean, unless you're in the 50s or something and you're just like, all right, we think this guy can play and no one else can, or something like that. Let's go to the Kings now. We good there?
Yeah, so Sacramento did a series of moves. They drafted De'Aaron Fox. They traded 10 for 15 and 20. They took Justin Jackson and Harry Giles with those picks. And then they spent, and they drafted Frank Mason. And then they spent a ton of money, multi-year money mostly, on veterans. They signed George Hill, basically a two-year contract. He had that light partial guarantee on the third year. Gave Zebo 2 years, and then Vince Carter 1 year, $8 million. And then they lost, you know, Collison and Gay and Tyreek. They basically lost, like, all of the veterans on the prior year team. And then they sign Bogdan Bogdanovic to a 3-year deal, $24 million. I think that's looking pretty good for them. So I gave them a C- at the time. I said that it was kind of overkill for them, basically the way that they use their money on veterans. I moved them down to a D. Fox, you know, that's still an open question, but the free agent signings were an absolute disaster. And where I wanted to focus on that part of it is not even thinking about the opportunity cost of signing Randolph and Hill in 2017, which is certainly they could have done a lot with that. That was $32 million that they gave those two guys in 2017. If you want to add Vince Carter, that's 40. But they also still paid those guys. It had $23 million in obligations for the 2018 season, even after moving George Hill for Amon Shumpert, something obviously they wouldn't have had to do if George Hill was not on the roster. They didn't get any assets in that deal. They just got out of some money and any assets of value. So what could they have done with another $23 million this year? A lot. Like they, even if it was getting an extra first round pick, like they could have done so much with that and they got zero value from it.
I mean, they could have done an Aaron Gordon offer sheet. They could have, I mean, they had a lot of ways to go. Now, of course, they also drafted Marvin Bagley. And so with all these players on the market who were power forwards, all of a sudden that didn't make sense. But, you know, nobody said they had to draft Marvin Bagley either. They could have had a lot of bites at the apple in restricted free agency to really get someone who could be a part of the Kings, next good Kings team, instead of having Zach Randolph and Amon Shumpert on the team. The way I would characterize it, I gave him a C minus initially. I don't know why I was so positive at the time, but
I could tell you why. We both really liked George Hill at that point.
But no, I don't think that's what it was, actually. I mean, because I never thought that made sense, right? Because
I wrote that it was okay.
So yeah, yeah. That's... I mean, it was, but, and also I think, because this is the thing, right? They ended up with the number two pick anyway, but like their goal was really dumb, right? Like people are like, oh yeah, the Kings are really going to be respectable this year. They're going to like get back into playoff contention, which we never bought. But like, you know, with getting George Hill, who they drafted or they signed after they'd already drafted De'Aaron Fox, just didn't really seem to make much sense. Bogdanovich does look like a good contract, but that's really all of their contracts that they signed that were any good. You know, spending $7 million on Vince Carter really looked like kind of a waste. But they had this dumb goal of getting better when they didn't, you know, the signings weren't going to accomplish that. And what it should have done is give them a much worse draft pick. So they had a goal that didn't make any sense, but fortunately for them, they were so incompetent in trying to accomplish that goal that they couldn't accomplish it, and therefore they got another good pick, which, you know, they may have screwed up again by taking Bagley. And they have, you know, as you mentioned, that over $20 million on their books for this year as well. But I mean, it's important to remember, you know, what did they win, 27 last year or something? Like they had by far, like, were one of the luckiest teams. Like this team should have been in the low 20s last year, and that's after spending all this money to try and get better. It really just, the whole plan made no sense whatsoever. The fact that Scott Perry was able to parlay that into getting an even better job with the Knicks is completely hilarious. So the one thing that might be a saving grace was that getting Jackson and Giles for Collins. I probably would rather have those two guys at this point. We'll see what happens with Giles.
Well, so what I wanted to ask you was, but would you rather have 15 and 20 or 10? If the kind of going back to the Justin Patton issue of like drafting the wrong guys, does that make it, how does that affect?
Yeah, I mean, generally we've seen that, you know, picks in those range, where you're trading up for picks in the 10 range, you know, you're usually better off with the lower picks. You know, the Nurkic Harris for McDermott trade being an extreme example of that. The Eddie Griffin for, oh, let me see if I can remember the three guys. This will be interesting. Richard Jefferson was one of them. Oh, it was this left-handed dude from Pepperdine. It wasn't like Brandon Armstrong. It might have been Brandon Armstrong was the guy's name. And then...
It was. I'm so impressed.
Oh, and then was the last one Jason Collins?
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes! It's that 2001 draft. So anyway, we really go on some tangents here in the summer. We are these are not the tightest episodes, but nonetheless, you know, I was gonna say D plus. After that rant, I talked myself into a D.
One other thing I want to mention is they did pass on OG Anunoby twice, and he would be a wonderful fit with this team because they got 15 and 20. They could have taken him at either of those spots. And with Harry Giles, you know, they gave him a redshirt year. We'll see how he looks this season. That redshirt didn't really cost them anything, you know, in terms of, oh no, they lost a year of evaluation, anything like that, because they still suck. But we'll see if he's actually worth the juice is worth the squeeze, if you will.
The Spurs, you gave them a D minus. I gave them a D. I will stick with the D. The one thing that we can add to this now is that they extended LaMarcus Aldridge for $26 million this year. You'll recall that... I'm sorry, I misspoke. He had a player option for $22.3 million this year that he could have opted out of. Instead, he opted into that. They put $26 million for 2019-20 on the end of that. And then he has another year in 2021. That's the really confusing one when you try to truncate it. $24 million, but only $7 million guaranteed with a guarantee date of June 29th, 2020. The Aldridge extension, we didn't really care for it. We thought they were going to have all this flexibility in the summer of 2018 to build around Kawhi. Well, guess what? Kawhi is not there anymore. Aldridge played much better last year than I think anyone would have anticipated. Is getting into his mid-30s now, so could regress at any time. I probably would stick with the same D, but it's very hard to evaluate. I mean, they obviously signed Patty Mills and Pau Gasol, those were bad. We dinged them for losing John Simmons. Like, that was fine. It's not the end of the world. But I would just stick with the D, but it's just hard to say, you know, how much of that offseason had to do with Kawhi leaving. Maybe not much, but also maybe he felt like, hey, we don't have any way to get better, and that's part of why I want to leave.
A couple other things I wanted to mention briefly. Rudy Gay worked out better, far better than I anticipated. I mean, he was healthier. They needed more from him with Kawhi basically losing the entire season. And they also, you know, you brought up Jonathan Simmons. They lost Dwayne Dedmon. He signed a completely reasonable contract with the Atlanta Hawks. I would have rather had Dedmon on his contract than Pau Gasol, though obviously there were personal dynamics that were in there. They retained Manu on a reasonable contract. Surprise, surprise. Patty Mills, that's rough. I mean, giving a clear backup point guard $12 million a year. And it is interesting how that shifted based on what San Antonio did. Part of the reason I was critical of the Mills signing was that I thought they were basically trapped at point guard, that they were going to re-sign Tony Parker.
Well,
and then
well
we didn't
recall
know what was going
that
on with DeJounte.
Part of the reason for that was he had a small cap hold. I mean, it's worth noting this. I mean, it doesn't excuse it because they ended up signing these bad contracts. But, you know, whether they're trying to get Chris Paul or someone else in free agency, Mills had a small cap hold. That was the price of him returning, was they had to overpay a little bit at that point. And Pau Gasol presumably was offered something to opt out of his player option and maybe would have taken less if they could have gotten a big free agent. But of course, that did not happen. But yeah, I mean, you know, they signed those contracts. They're on the books. I mean, it's part of the grid. But there was a reason for them.
Yeah. And the other one we should mention is Derek White didn't play much last year. He did have a pretty good summer league. We'll talk about that later on. Josh Hart was on the board. This gets into the problem we were just talking about before. So I don't put a lot of weight into that. But yeah, I gave them a D minus. I moved that up to a D. It's just, you know, it's basically the same thing. And obviously a big demerit for signing Joffrey Lovert,
who opted out of his player option. That signing actually looks a lot better now than it did then, just because he opted out. He's going back to Europe.
No, it parallels Blake Griffin. You make a bad decision. Do you give them the benefit for a guy making the call to bail you out? And my answer is generally no.
The Jazz, I gave them a B initially. You gave them an A minus. My regrade is now an A minus. I mean, they did lose Gordon Hayward. That wasn't necessarily within their control, at least at that time. They also decided not to re-sign George Hill. That was a great move, although they had offered him a massive extension during the season. Joe Ingles, 4 for $50. After there had been rumors of an even larger offer sheet coming from the Magic, that we thought was an overpay, but he certainly was worth that contract, at least in the first year. Hopefully will be this year, may start to decline a little bit. The only reason I gave him an A minus instead of just a straight A, obviously that Mitchell trade was brilliant and they got to the second round, which is way further than anyone else thought they could, was I thought that the pick of Tony Bradley is another one of these, okay, what's the point of this guy kind of trades, especially given the fact that they, you know, there are other guys who are drafted right around there, but both by the Lakers, that it could have been worthwhile. But yeah, Bradley, you know, they moved up from 30, they moved up to go get him from 30 to 28. I mean, that really didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, that part's not great. I'm still surprised you gave them a minus because they also did something that you generally really like, which is avoiding using their cap space on really bad long-term contracts. They did give Joe Ingles, though his contract descends, so that makes it look a little bit better, and especially with the possibility that they spend in 2019, so he's under $12 million at that point. So that's, you know, that's pretty good. Rubio for what ended up being number 20. That's a reasonable trade. There was no rationale. I mean, Donovan Mitchell at that point, he exceeded expectations by so much that there was no reason to believe that he would be able to take the reins that quickly. And so they needed somebody like Rubio, and Rubio was still very valuable for them even after Mitchell grew into a much better, much more complete player. But giving Tabo, Drebko, Ekpe Udoh reasonable contracts that were all, you know, kind of fair value for that second year. And so they ended up keeping two of the three and letting Drebko go. I think that worked out really well for them. And team-friendly deals. And I mean, they dodged a bullet with George Hill. We didn't necessarily know that at the time, but I mean, Rubio is also, we should mention, he's making less money now than George Hill is now with the Cleveland Cavaliers, but then with the Sacramento Kings. So that worked out reasonably well for them. So for me, it's a straight A. And for me, this was a no hesitation straight A, because even though it wasn't perfect, you mentioned the Tony Bradley part of it, within the constraints, I thought they did spectacularly.
Yeah, maybe I'm being too harsh on it. I should just give him an A. I'll stick with the A minus. The Bradley, just because, I mean, it's not the end of the world, the Bradley thing, but it's just like, I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll be better. I haven't had a chance to really dig into his film yet from Summer League, so maybe I'll be more impressed, but I don't expect that to be the case. All right, we are done here. Wow, that was it. I mean, do you realize last year we did all of these regrades in one podcast, the entire league? We must have just talked more this year.
Yeah. We like talking, but I like the substances. I think the other thing that we've kind of gotten better understanding is just that we have a lot more real estate in the offseason, so we might as well use it to talk about things like this that people are interested in instead of some of the more hypothetical things. And the process of this, and this is actually something I wanted to tease, is that we got asked some good questions about the process of doing these regrades that we will talk about in our soon-to-be-released Patreon mailbag. And so if you want to get kind of insights into things like that that are a part of the show, that is another benefit that you get from Patreon, because we don't really go meta very often on this, maybe at the end of the mock off season a little bit, but other than that, if you want that kind of input in the insight into the show, that is a great way to get it.
All right, that's a good one to end on. patreon.com/DuncanLarue to get that monthly mailbag podcast, and we'll be back later in the week with as yet to be determined content. That's a great tease. We'll talk to you all then.